Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Els, joined in the dugout by my pal Brian Svensson.
Hey, hi, howdy.
And it's been an eventful week for your Blue Jays. And so we haven't even traded messages about this. I've held off on asking you your thoughts specifically so we could talk about it on air. As the Jays wrap up their series with the Yankees with yet another Aaron Judge home run, how are you feeling?
I'm just going to read you an edited-ish version, a set of text messages that I sent to Jared, our friend. He asked me, what do you think of the Yanks-Jays stuff? Quote from me, I think the Yankees are an a-hole organization that's shown it'll cheat to win if necessary, so it doesn't surprise me that they, if they've got stuff up, and it doesn't surprise me that they're back to using sticky stuff. F the Yankees, cannot stand any of them, and most of their fan base makes it worse. Just an entitled bunch of babies. The haircut rule is so stupid. It's draconian, pseudo-fascist, and their fans think it's the best effing thing since sliced bread. I hate it. I hate them.
I'm glad you wrote it out so that we could hear it in its entirety. So referring, of course, to the sticky stuff, Domingo Herman ejected and now suspended 10 games.
Yep, that's the mandatory penalty.
For sticky stuff, the ump saying that
stickiest thing he's ever felt.
Stickiest thing he's ever felt, and he couldn't pull his hand off of Herman to infer what exactly the stuff was, despite Herman's protestation that it was just rosin.
Well, look, I'm sure it probably was just rosin, but like there is such a thing as too much rosin. The Yankees fans know all too well. George Brett, you know?
Yeah. And I was going to say, right? an historic reference there.
Yeah. You can have too much of anything, right? Like it's possible, right? Like, yes, it's a legal substance, but you know, yes, you can have too much of it. Overall, man, like what I think happened with the whole Judge thing is that the pitcher was tipping his pitches and everybody knew it. And he was getting signals about, because it was like a tipping thing you could only see from the side. I think he's probably getting it from one of the base coaches, and that's fine. Like, that's part of the game. I'm not mad or upset about that. And them not telling us immediately that that's what it was is also fine, because like, why would you want to give up your advantage? I understand those. That's fine. But like, just how entitled they were about it afterwards, man. Just acting so indignant. How dare you accuse the Yankees of cheating ever? Buddy, let's be serious. You know that you got those memos about those stupid wristwatches, and You hired Carlos Beltran. You are suspect numero three after the Red Sox and the Astros. So, like, maybe don't be throwing stones because you might be living in a greenhouse.
Yeah, no, I mean, they've been implicated in prior cheating scandals. So,
constantly.
Of course, people are going to be a little reluctant to give them the benefit of the doubt or maybe cast aspersions their way if there's something happening that seems a little suspect.
Yeah,
it's entirely absolutely reasonable of Jason. I mean, it's not the level of professional for Boston and Dan to do it on New York, though. But like the Toronto, New York, it's a tumultuous, like antagonistic relationship between these two teams.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And like, you know, and just think too about the place in which Torontonians specifically were coming from, right? The Raptors, the Marlies, the Leafs, all eliminated within a week.
Yeah.
They just got dumped on by the Yankees too. And there was something suspicious going on. You know, no, they're not going to give you the benefit of the doubt when you've done stuff like that before. You guys have been jerks in the past. And at the end of the day, like you're doing something suspicious. It, you know, I get it from all sides. I understand.
You mentioned the broadcast crew is talking about it on air. You're not in favor of them kind of
speculating on these kinds of things? I think that's a little unprofessional on air. That's something that you leave to the researchers and the journalists, you know, the people that do the side content, and then you can bring it up afterwards, but don't be the originators. I think that's sloppy journalism. Because there's no, you're just speculating at that point, right? That is like when you are a color guy or a play-by-play guy, I think that's journalism, right? Like you are being part of a journalistic presentation or broadcast of a sport and entertainment, but you're still conducting yourself with journalistic ethics. And to just speculate wildly like that on air, I think that's
color guy is more of like a talking head.
That's fair. The play-by-play guy has a little more responsibility,
right? To stick to what's within the lines, right? Like,
and to try and hold back, right? Like, sometimes good, sometimes bad example, I suppose would be Ron and Don, right? Don mm-hmm. would say stuff wildly, and that's not fine because of the specific things he said, but fine in the generalness of the role. And Ron would be the one that would be like, well, you know, maybe not that specifically, or we haven't had the chance to verify that. Right. Like, and so I think I expected a little bit more from Mr. Schulman in that regard.
Right.
And because Buck has been a play-by-play guy before too, I think I expect a little bit more.
He's going to wear his play-by-play cap rather than his color cap?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I thought it was a little irresponsible. I don't know. Do you have a different opinion? I'm open to hearing about it.
Well, I haven't really like given it a lot of thought as to like whether it was inappropriate or not until you mentioned it. And so like, I mean, yes, they're journalists, but they're not journalists in the like investigative sense, right? Like, cause usually like when I think of, like, you know, like a sideline reporter like goes and asks the questions and then like kind of reports back.
Sure.
Right. And that's a different role than just kind of like wildly like, oh, I saw so-and-so in the dugout and I think they were crouched over and I think they were like throwing up or something like that would be inappropriate.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Whereas yeah. like, you know, I saw them crouched over. I went and asked the trainer what the deal was, that kind of like, that's the journalism aspect of it. Whereas like, yes, I would say the play-by-play guy's role is like call the balls and strikes and, you know, describe the action on the field. And the color person really can, honestly, like, I mean, obviously I don't give them carte blanche, but they can certainly say what they want about the game or draw in inferences or references from outside the game or from past games.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. That's fair. Yeah. All right. I'm a little mistaken then. Okay.
I think it's just like a relational thing like one person has like a specific kind of set of guidelines, and yeah, and the other is, it's a little looser, a little freer. But I mean, certainly like they were reacting to what they saw, right? In terms of the side eye that Aaron Judge gave.
Yeah.
Like they were kind of in like, you know, speculating, but like rooted in some like basis in fact.
Yeah. I mean, a considerable basis in fact, and or history. Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. I mean, yeah, the Yankees are absolutely wrapped up and involved in that.
So with this,
honestly,
oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, no.
No, I was going to pivot. So you go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what I think my large opinion about the whole cheating Astros, Yankees, Red Sox vortex at this point in time is largely that I think the reason why Major League Baseball was so lenient on the Astros at this point in time is that they had a pretty large batch of evidence that they were all doing it, or a vast majority of the teams were doing it, and just didn't want to, you know, didn't want to
open up that Pandora's
box. Be that out about it. Yep. They saw what happened when they did the whole steroids thing and how poorly that went, and decided to not do that one like the second time. Yeah. That's my, I guess, conspiracy theory about that.
So what I was going to pivot to was in the Thursday night game, Judge's fourth home run of the series, that takes him to 32 against the Blue Jays in his career in 108 games. It's the most of any Yankee, now surpassing Jorge Posada, who did 31 in 186 games. There's going to be a gap between first and second of more than one home run at some point in this relationship, because I think Judge has got a few more years as a Yankee and a lot more games against the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I mean, he's mashed against us for a long time. I mean, like, I think a lot of people probably think of that as a surprising stat, but you have to, I guess, consider a couple things, right? That like a lot of the Yankees' major mashers that were career guys really kind of preceded the Blue Jays. And then, you know, the mashers that they tended to get, the real home run guys that they got post Blue Jays, only were tended to be kind of more the mercenary types that only stuck around for a few years.
The Giambi types. Yeah.
Yeah. And the Reggie Jacksons, and, you know, the Gary Sheffields, right?
Oh, the Sheff. Yeah.
Right. Like those guys were not there for long. They showed up and they hit a lot of home runs for the Yankees, but they weren't there for a ton of time. I'm kind of surprised that A-Rod wasn't the previous record holder. That guy killed us, man.
So apparently not as much as Jorge Posada. Did you happen to see the piece earlier this week that Will Leach wrote about are the standings upside down?
No.
So, you know, we're a quarter of the way through the season already, and you know, trying to make sense of where things are at in the standings, looking at the most recent Fangraph projections as the baseline. And just kind of like, you know, like the fact that the Rangers are ahead of the Astros was something that no one predicted, that the Tigers are ahead of the White Sox. But in the AL East, the gap that he looks at is the Yankees and the Orioles. And so the current standings, I mean, the Orioles are up by 3 games right now. The projected place put the Yankees up by 5. Now, the thing that he pointed out, and I mean, this is something in keeping with your affinity for the Orioles this season, you know, in order for the Orioles to then end up behind the Yankees by 5, they would have to go on a 59-63 pace.
To end
up with the 85-77 record of the Fangraphs projections. You know, so a sub 500 pace from now on. You know, so the question that he poses, do you think the Orioles are this bad moving forward, and do you think the Yankees will be this good? Which Fangraphs has them an 89 win team, which would be third best in the AL and the division.
No, it's ridiculous. The O's are a really good team with really good players. What are we talking about?
Yeah. Okay. So I wanted to get your read on this, and I felt like, yeah, like, I mean, sure.
This is ridiculous.
The Yanks, you know, like 11 wins in the past 16, certainly, you know, kind of pulling themselves out of the complete doldrums they were in. But, you know, now losing Domingo Herman for 10 games, that's certainly going to impact them. Nestor Cortes, apart from this start against the Blue Jays on Thursday, you know, his last four outings, 8.5 ERA, 0-2 record, and he couldn't pitch through the third time in the order. It's been brutal for them.
Nestor has not been so nasty lately.
Not so nasty. It's been nasty to watch Nestor. But yeah, this was an interesting article. I'll link to it in the show notes. But you know, especially because he kind of like looks at different projections across the division. But this one especially, I think the Orioles are who they've shown themselves to be, and that they just have arrived earlier than we anticipated.
I mean, they're really good. Like they have players that have been on the fringes of being good for a long time, and they're finally at the ages where they're putting it together. I don't know if they had a, you know, staffing change that helped them put stuff together or whatever, but, you know, like Jorge Mateo, Anthony Santander, Cedric Mullins, these guys are good players. These were good players. Austin Hayes, these are good players that were coming. Ryan Mountcastle, we knew these guys were going to be pretty decent, you know, and then you get Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman, who I have been telling people Adley Rutschman is one of the best players in baseball, and I don't think people realize it. People still don't get it. This dude's mashing. He is a catcher. He is mashing, and he is one of the best defensive catchers in the game too. It's bonkers how talented these O's are, and they're getting an enormous helping hand from their monster bullpen right now. There's so little pressure on their starters because, like, they only have to go five innings before the bullpen just goes, okay, that's it, we're shutting it down. Between Batista and Cano and Wells, like, it's just, it's kind of, and Brian Baker, like, it's bonkers how good this O's team is. And I don't think people get it. Like, it would not shock me. It wouldn't shock me if the O's won the division this year. They're really, really good, man.
Well, their run differential certainly has them in second, you know, plus 31 right now. Tampa Bay, that run differential, plus 121 still.
Yeah.
The expected win-loss puts them actually one game up of where they are in the actual standings. But yeah, no, very strong team. And I really think it's ridiculous to think that the projection based on the FanGraph projections that they would be that bad going
like
forward.
The worst team in baseball going forward. Like, it's not
pretty
happening.
Much, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it's possible for them to be that bad unless like the whole team gets injured.
Yeah. One of the other things that Leach looks at is like I said, the White Sox and Tigers in the AL Central. The White Sox kind of are as bad as they seem, or at least are playing as bad, which leads me to the other piece that I read this week, which is Mark Feinson's piece on 10 players getting buzzed as potential trade candidates, of which 1, 2, 3, 4 out of the 10 are White Sox.
Yeah, well, they stink. They're on high contracts. You know, big guy Jerry's going to want to get out of those if he doesn't see the team performing. And I think a lot of those guys are going to want to get out of there too. I think La Russa ruined that locker room. I think they had something special, and that old fart came in and ruined the chemistry and made every single one of those guys miserable. And even if they brought in anybody else, it does not matter. That situation is ruined. I don't know if you saw the clip of Tim Anderson telling Jose Abreu the other night,
yes.
I want out of this place.
Yes. Yeah. The lip readers pulled out the stops and you know, yeah, I did see that one.
Yep. So, I mean,
yeah, he's number one on that list. That's for sure.
Man. Oh man. The hoops,
I mean, that's alphabetical.
I would jump through to get Tim Anderson on the Blue Jays.
That would be, well, especially considering your current shortstop.
Yeah, great bat. He's a wonderful, wonderful hitter, but lordy, lordy, he is maybe the worst defensive shortstop in the history of Major League Baseball, man. He is atrocious. Oof.
Yeah, Anderson would be an upgrade. Other guys on the list, Dylan Cease, of course, on the White Sox, Lucas Giolito, and Yasmani Grandel amongst the White Sox mentions. Of course, as with any kind of like potential trade candidates at this time of year, closers and late inning relievers rank on the list as well. You've got Aroldis Chapman and Jack Flaherty on the Royals and Cardinals, respectively. Both teams struggling.
I wonder what the White Sox do with Liam Hendricks when he comes back.
Do you? Oh man, do you do that to that guy?
That's the question, right? Like, and like the question is like it's on him too, right?
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
Does he want to play baseball? I don't know, man. That's a conversation I guess they're going to have, but if he's available, I think he'd be on a lot of teams' list. That guy's a premier closer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, he would be in demand. It's just like after battling back from cancer, like I guess it would
Do you want to like, yeah, do you have to respect his wishes if he doesn't want to
his wishes if he didn't want to move or something? Like if he was settled and he'd been, you know, stuff with his family and undergoing these treatments and then kind of working his way back.
Yeah, no, then you don't move him. You just say, hang in there, buddy.
Then you're like, oh, we're going to respect your choices. Someone whose choices weren't respected, but has turned to great success. Joey Gallo. I don't know if you read Do-Hyung Park's Twins Beat newsletter, but Joey Gallo had played 781 games in his major league career before getting put in the leadoff spot. And apparently he wasn't happy.
He hates it.
Rocco Baldelli quoted as saying he heard through the grapevine Gallo had some choice words for him and some other people. But Gallo hit a homer in his first at bat in leadoff, and then he did it again the next day. And things have been going well despite his disdain for the spot.
Yeah, he's been mashing in that spot. He doesn't want to hit there. He says he's never hit there before. He hates hitting there. Really, really doesn't like it. But you know, if you're hitting well there, right? Like it is the same thing. I think Anthony Rizzo, right? The Cubs led Anthony Rizzo off for a while and he loathed it. Mm-hmm. He mentioned how much he disliked it, but you know, if that's what you have to do to win ball games, man, that's what you got to do to win ball games. He's a talented hitter. And for how often he gets on base and like he's actually not a terrible, like in theory, not a terrible leadoff hitter.
Well, and this was one of the things. So like, you know, he's kind of surprisingly speedy too. So if he gets on base.
Oh yeah. I mean, he doesn't steal bags, but he is an above average, a supremely above average base runner. And creates quite a few runs with his legs every single year. So yeah, I mean, he's exactly the kind of guy you want on base. That's going to turn a double from, you know, him standing on third to him scoring, right? Like that's the kind of stuff that he provides.
Yeah. Twins bench coach Jace Tingler quoted in the piece as saying, you know, I don't think a lot of people who don't watch him on a daily basis realize that he runs the bases really, really well.
Yeah. Joey Gallo is a supremely talented ball player in every single way that a traditional statistician would not see, because or like a traditional guy probably wouldn't get either, right? Like they would just like see a 209 batting average and be like, eh.
Yeah.
And not understand that this guy is one of the best defensive outfielders in baseball and a supremely talented base runner.
The quote from Rocco Baldelli, when told that, you know, he doesn't want to play leadoff, he said, the thoughts are always welcome, but right now at the moment, they're not going to be taken into account.
Yeah. Yeah. Rocco's a funny guy. He's quite interesting. I think he's a pretty good manager, and Twins are having themselves a pretty fun season.
Mm-hmm.
I've been watching quite a few Twins games, and yeah, they're a heck of a fun team to watch.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I'm certainly enjoying things in Twins fan land. And I'd like to welcome Connor Milligan, past guest here and past A's fan, who, when I messaged him this week about the Las Vegas deal and said, you know, sorry about your A's. He said, you know what? I think I'm becoming a Twins fan.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm sorry about the A's, but you know, one more for the Twinkies is not a bad thing.
Yeah. So pour one out for his A's fandom, tip of a cap for the Twins fandom. As far as I'm concerned, more people welcome on the Twins bandwagon anytime. We're pretty much running out of time. I'm going to hand things off to Dr. Renewable before we go. What's on the pity party today?
I've got an eclectic mix of just jams and stuff. It's a long weekend and I was just kind of feeling like throwing whatever the heck out there. So if you do tune in, you're going to get to hear some stuff from the Strokes will be on there. I got a couple tracks from Fallout Boy. Got Danger Doom, some tracks from a track from Marvin Gaye. Just a whole variety of other stuff in there as well. Is maybe some Streetlight Manifesto.
Such thing as emo doc rock?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose so. Why not?
Yeah. Well, that would be perfect for the lake. With that, stick around for Dr. Renewable. Don't forget the pity party's at 1 o'clock this afternoon, and have yourselves a great long weekend.
Strike three, you're out.